Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the desert we tell. And it's episode 178.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
But exciting.
Into the depths of November we are. Ooh.
It's a second.
Yes,
is
I know.
Is that a depth?
It is. It does, because spooky season feels so long ago now.
It is, but we're still surrounded by pumpkins.
Yeah,
I see.
I'm not taking those down.
Yeah, so a little pumpkin-y shenanigans going over there.
I've been very busy.
It's no excuse.
And I didn't want to take them down. I wanted to carry on forever and ever and ever.
In my mind, it's always spooky season.
It is. Well, now we just go into winter with winter ghosts. Yes.
Right.
Different from pumpkin ghosts.
Rotten pumpkins.
I did get, you know, the pumpkins I had last week. I started carving frantically on Halloween to put outside, and one of them was not going well.
Slightly past their best.
I fucking persisted, and that bastard is out there. Poor hedgehogs.
Just dead throughout Canterbury.
Yes. No, the hedgehogs, they don't die. But
they just suffer horribly.
Yes, they do. Don't leave your pumpkins out for hedgehogs. They eat them, but then they get all cold and dehydrated before they hibernate and then suffer through hibernation. You don't want to be cold when you're hibernating.
No, absolutely.
No, so that's a lesson for all of you out there.
Says you who's left your pumpkins outside for the hedgehogs.
No, I didn't leave them outside for the hedgehogs. There's no sign out there this year.
You just left them outside. If our pumpkin gets them, it's our own stupid fault.
No, they're going in the bin. It's been leave me alone. I don't like this line of questioning. Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly, yeah.
Don't do as I do.
God, no.
We learn nothing from this podcast. We'd be spelling weird stuff and not being able to count. How are you anyway?
All right.
You're good, are you, Nick?
I won't go that far, but
you're all right. You're struggling through.
Struggling through.
I know. It's been a tough week for you.
It's all ups and downs.
All right, well, we're all here for you.
Well, how kind.
Yeah, we all love you and we support you.
Do any of you work for the Halifax? In which case, I hit you.
Them specifically. The person was listening to this, was about to put down their beverage and just like go, oh, I can help. Oh, wow.
Especially if you work in the mortgage department.
Yeah, it's not going well, is it? This is a fresh drama that's being played out. Could turn into a true crime story in itself.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, indeed. We are here for it.
It's soon. It's coming soon. I'm going to stop saying that because I've made many predictions and my work as a psychic is not...
Not going well.
Not going well. No, yeah. Not at all. But I'm sending out positive vibes and I'm giving you drinks.
That's what I need.
Yeah. When you get upset, we share wine and dinner, and it's lovely. I mean, it works out great for me.
Yeah, good. I got screwed. I ended up paying.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Oh, you did. Yeah, yeah. I offered to send you money, because I'll give you money.
I probably will.
I have money.
I just haven't done it.
I've got tons of money.
I'm rich.
I'm rich. I got like £4 upstairs that I just found.
I haven't paid for the hotel yet either.
Hmm?
I haven't paid the hotels yet.
Oh,
either.
Yeah, we need to pay for that. That's yeah. Tomorrow. Maybe this should tomorrow. Be... Not the admin part of this podcast. Any poisonings this week? Hedgehog related or not?
Apparently yeah. Swathes of wildlife.
Well, what you do with your own pumpkins is your own business, sir. Way.
I do nothing with them. For fear of the hedgehogs.
That's your excuse.
That's my reason why I don't have a pumpkin. I don't hate hedgehogs.
You just run them down with your car. No, no other poisonings. And we'll see. We'll see how the hedgehog population has been decimated.
Exactly.
I do have a big fat hedgehog, but they're in the back garden. That's right. No pumpkins are out there. But the little hedgehog comes snuffling out every now and then. He's lovely.
Because they only have like a 3 meter radius their entire life.
Shut up. All right. What I have
in Sinead's garden can't travel.
Yes, it's nice back there. There are no pumpkins. Don't act like I've left a trail of pumpkins to a mass hedgehog grave for them to tumble into.
Yeah, it's well lit. It's got little candles going towards it. Big sign saying hedgehogs this way. So you really went for it this year.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that'll teach that hedgehog that wouldn't let me pet it once. Well, speaking of hedgehogs.
mainly hedgehogs.
Mainly hedgehogs and what we do with our pumpkins. I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Oh, we certainly should. First of all, this week, I mean, I think she knows what to do with the pumpkins. We have Arsenic Delia.
Arsenic Delia.
Arsenic Delia. Poison pumpkins are plenty.
And thank you to Hesper Wells. Another good name.
Goodness. Yeah, absolutely.
Arsenic Delia and Hesper Wells. I think they fight. Do you think they're on both opposite sides? I think they're both villains, but they're in rival gangs.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Arsenic Delia, weirdly, has a gun.
Yes. Never poisoned anyone in life.
No. She's like, my parents had high hopes for me. I prefer the quick route. Whereas Hesper Wells, she strangles people. I don't know why I went there.
You heard it here first, everyone.
Yeah, I just picture her like just tightening a rope, you know.
Okay, harsh. Around tiny hedgehogs.
She got a gallows for her. She meets out justice.
Street justice.
Street justice for the hedgehog. We don't know. Hedgehogs could be bastards. We don't know. We've never tracked them down.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how we got onto this tag.
Thank you, beautiful, delicious Patreon subscribers. You're very, very sexy. Very, very sexy people. We've had fun over on Patreon. We did round off October with not one, not two, but five haunted venues.
Haunted venues.
The top five haunted venues. Well, international.
So you kept going, no, it's not top five.
In no particular order, but those are my favourite international ones. Right. But I encourage people to send me suggestions of more. You know, next year's list
could be completely different. See if people can change your mind.
Well, exactly. And also these haunted venues need to up their game. Yeah. Very precise judging criteria every single year.
Yes, apparently so.
But yes, it was very good fun. We've also this month put out a little extra content for Spooky Month. We do have some recipes coming out, actually. So, well, a recipe.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yes. I meant to do that a few days ago. Yes. I was so busy.
I promised a sample, but nothing has arrived.
No, Ben ate it.
So, yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, it never actually happened.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't like pumpkin spice based things, so we thought you would have thrown up in your mouth. So we ate the entire pumpkin spice latte loaf. No, it's delicious.
No.
You like a carrot cake?
Yeah.
Don't go me. Do you like carrot cake?
Yeah, I like carrot cake.
Yeah, it's like carrot cake but better. Well, you know, the recipe will be out soon and people can bake it themselves. And hopefully I should have some footage for you. It was just me shouting at my husband to bake. I thought it was charming.
Bake faster!
I thought it was charming at the time. It could come out as, no one should see this. Lest the lawyers
charming,
get involved.
Abusive. Mm. It's a fine line, really, isn't it?
If this podcast has taught us nothing. If you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us on Patreon if you haven't already. Patreon is a great platform. It's very flexible and it helps to support this show, helps us do what we do. It really does. And also Patreon supports loads of artists out there, so it's really worth looking into. Dip your toe into if you wish to at patreon.com/thepoisonerscabinet. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Apparently.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison. Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
What's with that?
It's drama.
Is it? Is that what it was? Well done.
I will let history be the judge of that.
I appreciate you letting me know.
I'm doing drama. You're just being a little bitch. Should we go with a cocktail?
Yeah, fine.
Yay, let's go with a cocktail. Also, I will say, we started off with a pre-cocktail cocktail.
Yes.
Mixed up a Boulevardier. And I think this Boulevardier is particularly good thanks to the dehydrated orange slices.
It's a lovely dehydrated orange slice.
That I made specifically for Nick. I made a whole array of dehydrated fruits.
Only because you bought an air fryer.
Yeah.
And you've wanted to air fry everything inside.
You really have. Everything has been air fried that should not be air fried. But it works. Damn it, it works. Yes, I bought it specifically for this podcast. Can I claim it on expenses?
No.
No. All right, I didn't think I'd get
one. Unless I get one as well.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's a lovely thing.
Isn't this lovely orange slice?
I often complain about how unadventurous I am with garnishes, or I just can't be arsed with garnishes.
Yeah.
But it makes such a difference.
And you've got lime and lemon slices in there too. Lovely dehydrated. The thing about it was, when I was dehydrating in the air fryer, I was like, oh, it'll take but minutes. And it was just it will take 6 hours. You're just doing them in here and it'll be cleaner and nicer and everything than in your skanky oven, woman. It actually said that to me. It was weird.
Did it?
Yeah, in my dreams. That's what's great about the air fryer. It comes alive at night.
It just abuses you.
Yeah, but 6 hours.
We know you're a terrible housekeeper.
God damn it, woman.
Your oven's filth.
Well, it is Nick's story this week. Hooray, hooray, hooray. But we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. So, Nick, this week's secret ingredient is
a bonfire.
A bonfire.
A bonfire.
A bonny bonfire.
Yes.
Something's just occurred to me.
What?
Why is it called a bonfire? I've actually never looked this up.
Because it's very good.
Is it?
I don't know.
I mean, that's probably it, isn't it? From the French. And they didn't continue with the French.
They just stopped halfway through. We got bored of the French.
Even we are sick of our own language.
It's so difficult to translate. We just
bon, stop. What's fire? No. Just fire. Great. Sorted that out.
So, yeah.
But a bonfire. Oh, how seasonally wonderful.
Seasonally wonderful.
For the English. The Americans may not know what the hell we're talking about.
Who doesn't know what a bonfire is?
Well, no, when I say seasonal. Because this time of year, often you have bonfires for certain reasons. But you do.
For certain reasons.
For certain reasons, which will become clear, I'm sure. But also, I don't know, do Americans call it a bonfire?
What else would they call it?
A fire.
No, it must be a bonfire. They're not that weird.
Tell us, please, darling listeners. But a bonfire, ooh, crackly, lovely, smoky. Well, with bonfire as the ingredient, inspiration, what have you come up with?
Well. We are having a Nick's variation of an autumn bonfire.
Okay.
So the cocktail called Autumn Bonfire. I've made my own little twist on it.
Love it.
Yes.
How many dehydrated orange slices will there be?
Oh, at least 12.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
Yes. I may come up with a different name because I have changed it. So I might come up with a different name.
It sounds very delightful. But,
I'm sure it will be.
Well, I think it is high time for us to kick leaves into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, the autumn bonfire.
Yes.
But Nick's twist. Have you come up with a different name?
Well, I'll see how good it is.
If it's not good, you're going to let it languish.
I'll say so, yes.
That shall not be named.
Autumn bonfire variant. If it's good, then I go, right, I'm naming it.
All right, you're going to work on it. All right, okay. Well, it's what is it? It's sort of a peachy orangey colour?
I'll go with an orangey. Flamey colour.
Oh, yeah, it's flame. Oh, mate. Flamey colour. Interesting. Okay, well, let's have a smell. It smells smoky. Ooh, clever boy. Ooh, a smoky aroma. Oh, I'm excited. All right, well, I hope it tastes as good as it smells.
Yeah.
Let's dive in. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay. Ooh, hello. Ooh, what is that? What's happening? Okay, I'm going to say something, Nick, and it's not the way it sounds.
That's always encouraging.
Okay, it has a blue cheese taste to it. Do you get that? You put blue cheese in it?
Obviously. Why wouldn't there be?
I'm not opposed to it.
It's got a blue cheese taste to it.
Because it's got a smoky taste aftertaste. Definitely something smoky in here. I don't think it's mezcal. But there's something smoky. Is it Lafroy?
It is, yes.
Yes, yes. I know you have an Islay and I know you have Lafroig.
It's the only one I've got.
I know, exactly. So it's an Islay whiskey. But it's got a sweetness behind it as well. I'm sorry, it's reminiscent of a good blue cheese.
Too much sweetness.
Too much sweetness. Yeah. All right, second sip here, okay. No, I don't mind that at all. It's very interesting. It's weird. It's weird.
Is not generally what you want to go for.
No, but it's good weird. Because I would still drink this. I'm smiling a lot because you're... I'm like, oh. It's just okay. Weird. Okay. I have no idea. Okay, so
apart from the Lafroy, give me some other thoughts.
Okay, so smoky. So there's some sweetness in. So is there a type of syrup in there? Is there a syrup?
There is a type of syrup in there.
Is it just sugar syrup?
Nope.
A flavoured syrup? It's not cinnamon? No. Nope. Honey? Nope.
Honey.
Oh, honey. Oh, it's a hello.
Honey syrup.
Hello.
Going on in there.
All right, honey and whiskey. Great. Makings of a good hot toddy. What the fuck else is in here? I don't know.
Three other things.
Three? Is there a type of juice?
There
or like
is.
A mixer?
Yes.
Orange juice?
Nope.
Apple juice?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing so well? What's happening?
Apple juice.
And blue cheese.
And blue cheese.
A nice roquefort.
Yes.
Yeah.
All mixed together.
Can we have crackers?
There's no blue cheese anywhere near this.
But and yet you have concocted something,
unless you've been storing your blue cheese next to the ice cubes, and they have taken on an aroma.
Yes,
I don't know.
Because I love a frozen blue cheese,
I don't know.
Obviously.
You're weird, so.
Yes, I am. I like this. Let's all have frozen blue cheese lollipops later. Okay, two more things. Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. Something else fruity?
Ish.
Ish?
Ish.
Lychee?
No.
Orange?
Autumnal.
Oh, hazelnuts.
Yes, very fruity.
Yeah. I'm not saying it was a good idea. Autumnal. Apple? Calvados?
Calvados.
Calvados! Ah, oh, yay.
2 weeks in a row. Bit of Calvados.
2 weeks in a row. I love Calvados. Yeah. And I have never found it. One more thing.
One more thing.
One more thing. Okay, is that fruity?
That is fruity.
Oh.
That has
triple
a,
sec?
Has a fruity twang.
Triple
not
sec?
Not entirely fruity, but there's definitely a fruity theme.
Triple sec?
No.
Third time wasn't going to work, was it?
White fruit, different thing.
Oh, orange. Orange.
Orange. This is painful now.
Orange bitters. Orange. No. Cointreau. Grand Marnier.
I
did actually guess everything this week.
took a while.
It took a while.
And there's
but it
a
just...
lot of prodding going on.
Do you want it
there.
Done right, fast or do you want it done right?
Mainly fast.
Right, okay, fine. That's do not want to go on a date with you.
Over okay. And done with. On with the next thing. Come on.
Okay, this is mental. This is mental, Nick. So what's your twist on this? What should have happened and what did you do?
Ordinarily, you have, in an autumn bonfire, you have apple juice. You have some sort of apple brandy. You have...
Can we have some of that?
No. We have cherry brandy, which is different.
Well done. Thank you for telling me that. Just, yeah. Been absolutely fucked without that.
And then you have an Islay. You do have a malt similar in there. And some bitters.
Okay.
But it also calls for maple syrup. We don't have a number of those things.
Right.
In there.
Okay.
Don't have any apple brandy.
No.
Don't have any maple syrup.
No.
In there as well. And I'm not a huge fan of the Islay.
You're not.
It's
no.
not my thing. So
I like it. But...
Yes, but I appreciate it needs to bring that sort of smoky element to
which it does.
So I would just reduce the amount of Islay.
Okay.
In there, I replaced the apple brandy with Calvados.
Nice, very good
there.
Idea.
And so when reducing the Islay, I replaced it with the Grand Marnier.
Oh.
So I was thinking like an orangey thing, but then the maple syrup. I thought I don't want to go with just plain sugar syrup, so I went with honey, which was too much honey.
I think the honey may have been where you fell down there. Because maple syrup, very, very different flavour profile.
Completely.
Of sugar. I mean, it's still sweet. Jesus.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but,
like,
no, very
it's
different,
not that different.
Flavour profile. I was just thinking to sort of autumnal bonfiry nights here.
Famously, bees love them.
But also not a lot of maple syrup either.
No, but autumn, I guess. Like, so, maple syrup, like people use excuses for that every
so,
time
I
year.
I did sort of think, I need to get some sort of like toffee syrup, like a toffee-apple-y sort of
oh my God.
Thing. But again, I
great
unfortunately
idea.
In the...
Or like a caramel. You could have used a caramel.
I could have used a caramel or something like that, but unfortunately I didn't have time to either produce or... Well, I mean, I,
produce.
Couldn't, be asked, I couldn't be asked to make a caramel or go and buy like a caramel syrup or anything like that. So I thought, honey, I've got honey.
All of this was like Nick wanted no effort.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, what is in the cupboard? What can I vaguely bullshit to justify? But I, with a theme, there was a thoughtful theme behind it.
I like that. I like you put the thought behind
autumnal it. Autumnal bonfire-y thing going on.
How do you feel about it? Truly and truly.
Truly and truly. I mean, it's perfectly drinkable. Mm. Absolutely perfectly drinkable. Would I say, I really want another one of those? No. Would I try it again, but tweak it? Yes.
See, I'm tempted to do that at the drinks break.
Yeah.
Much as it may kill us, but...
I'm thinking, actually, reduce the amount of apple juice.
Yeah.
Reduce the amount of honey.
Yeah. I would up the Islay. Wow, sorry.
So
this is not a sentence you should say. Up the Islay. You know me, I love a Roquefort.
Yeah.
And this is that in a glass. I don't know why.
This is Gorgonzola in a glass.
Have I said this before every time we've had an Islay? And have I gone, it's like blue cheese? Because I'm a bitch. But
there is that.
I do actually really like it. It's so weird.
Weird I can go with.
Weird, but good. It's perfectly drinkable. It's got all good ingredients in there. And they mix together to make something rather delightful.
Yes, and it's made us very giggly.
It has, yeah. And I'm keen to try the variants in the drinks break if we get there. Very importantly, what's it called?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Right, okay. All right, we'll wait.
Yeah.
To the end.
No, don't wait too long.
Do we have a bonfire in hand? Not a good idea if you ever watch a safety video. Is it time for a story, Nick?
It is certainly time for a story.
Yay!
It's a very exciting story.
Okay.
Big story.
Is it a big story?
Remember. Yeah. The 5th of November.
The gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why gunpowder, treason should ever be forgot. Yay!
And also I say, I do like gunpowder, treason, and plot as a name for a cocktail.
That's
so
it.
That's why I left it for a moment. That's why I thought gunpowder, treason, and plot. I like that.
Gunpowder, treason, and plot. Perfect. I like that as a name. Absolutely love it. I am happy. I'm fully aroused.
Good.
It's great.
I'm glad.
And I'm so happy because we're going to hear about the gunpowder plot.
The gunpowder plot, absolutely.
I mean, if we're not, that was a really weird setup. A
really weird entrance to that one. So this is the story of the gunpowder plot. The failed attempt in 1605 to assassinate James I and blow up Parliament. Now, many people will have heard of the gunpowder plot and of Guy Fawkes, who, of course, is the man who is famously associated with it.
Oh, yes.
But not everyone really knows the details,
perhaps
behind it. So on the 5th of November, people in the UK, I think it's the UK.
Some Commonwealth countries.
Yeah. So celebrate the failure to blow up Parliament. celebrate a failed plot with grand bonfires and firework displays and toffee apples. And I remember having jacket potatoes in your pockets to keep your hands warm when you were a kid.
I found a website that was detailing what the bonfire traditions are to students not of the English language.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it was adorable.
Nice.
It was adorable how it was written. Like, tradition dictates that people wear hats and scarves and gloves.
That's because it's cold. It's not because it's tradition.
There are several websites that also talk about, and you make the jacket potato that you put on the embers.
Put in the bonfire, absolutely.
And then you keep your hands warm in your pocket, and then you have it with butter and salt and cheese, if you're fancy. And that person went, it was never cooked right, but you still ate it.
But you still ate it.
And soup and warming things gathered around the bonfire. Yeah.
All that sort of sweets. Yeah, maybe some warm cidery sort of thing. You might get a mulled cider and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's all very, very exciting. But yeah, who really knows the details behind the plot and what motivated the people to attempt such a drastic plan?
I'm so excited to hear this because the detail of the history, I am so keen to hear from you because as an Irish Catholic, I have been lectured about this by my family every time we lit a bonfire, even though they're completely celebrated bonfire night. Like, oh yeah, let's light a bonfire. Also, by the way, it's all just a plot.
It's all a plot to burn the Catholics.
Burn the Catholics. So it would be nice to have an actually refreshing take on this.
No, that's where I'm going. Burn the Catholics. This can be half an hour of me saying, burn the Catholics.
So, but there was a basis for it.
There was a basis. Unsurprisingly, as it all comes down to a difference in religion, as we just established. As I say, the majority of the conflicts in the world in history do, generally. Mm. It's all a matter of religion. This time it is between Catholics and the Protestants. So time for a bit of a history refresh.
Woohoo!
I hope I do Miss Cloak proud.
Yay! Nice reference.
My,
I like it.
My history lessons.
I have high hopes for you to summarise all of that.
All of that in about 12 pages. So up until that point in time, so the 1600s, for the majority of English history, it has been part of the Roman Catholic Church. That dominates Europe, pretty much. Everyone looks up to the Pope. Mm. He is God's representative on Earth. He's got a big hat. He's very, very powerful.
A lot of sitting on
big fancy chairs, wearing fancy big hats chairs with big sticks. And in the minds of many people, loyalty to the Pope and to the Church is more important than loyalty to kings and queens. The Church has power over your immortal soul.
Yeah.
And that is no small thing, really. This is eternal salvation, which can only be achieved through the Church and through confession. Even the smallest of sin, if left unconfessed, left unsaid, can send you straight to hell.
Oh, God, yeah.
Really. So the priesthood has huge power and authority over their congregations and the populace. But really, by this time, a lot of people, well, some people are going, really? It's not ideal. This is not ideal. They're not really happy with how things are set up. Mm. And in the early 16th century, the Protestant Reformation starts to grow and build momentum. Now, they believe that really you don't need popes and cardinals and bishops and things to talk to God. It's like cutting out the middleman. Really. People can have a conversation with God and repent their sins without having to go to a church and pay lots of money, buy more people big hats.
Exactly. The eternal guilt as well of going there. We could do without this.
Yeah.
It's like someone basically going, you know what? I want to cut you out. I want to speak to the manager.
I'm going straight to the boss.
No, you have to deal with me, the bitter, bitter, twisted person.
Exactly.
Who was manning the desk for the day.
Yeah. Pretty much. And then, of course, you've got dear old Henry VIII, who gets hold of the idea and goes, "Whoa, this is more for his own nefarious purposes than any sort of ideological sort of standpoint, really." He's going, "Yes, I've got an idea. Hurrah."
My favourite piece of history, not just because, ooh, Henry VIII is the one that's taught. It's just that happened. I'm going to use this to shag who
Absolutely.
I like
yeah.
and kill all my wives. I'm going to marry again and again and again. They're like, no. Like, I'm the bloody king.
So there we go. With him, along comes the Church of England and such like. Now, this, of course, pisses off a great number of Catholics who have been very merrily confessing all their lives and having a grand old time doing it.
I mean, grand old times.
I don't know. I've never been to confession. I don't know.
Have you not?
No.
It's horrible.
I'm not Catholic.
Well, no, you haven't. I have. I forget bits of that. You Surely, go it, into it, a box.
Is it not some sort of therapeutic thing?
No!
I've done this and I've done this and I've done this.
Well, you end up just talking. Like, again, not been as an adult, because that would just, like, the place would be on fire. But as a child, as people going in, you have to go in a box with a man.
And if you don't, you're going to hell.
You've told them that I took the Lord's name in vain and I didn't say my prayers one night when actually I'd done a whole load of other shit. They were like, oh, well, nearly 10 Hail Marys.
10 Hail Marys and 3 Hello Dollies.
Yes. Vivid memory of sitting in the church with other kids and losing count. We'd all lost count of how many prayers we're supposed to be doing. Going, what are you on? Like 7. You went before me. Right, 5. What am I doing? I don't know.
That sounds like a marvellous time. After Henry VIII dies, Elizabeth I comes to the throne eventually through some convoluted shenanigans.
Eventually.
And in 1558, she declares that all English citizens will be Protestant. You have no choice in the matter. This is the way forward.
Love that energy.
Catholic clergy have to renounce their loyalty to the Pope, or we're going to kill you.
Yep.
And so it is now mandatory for every English person to go to a Protestant church service on a Sunday. And they take a register. If you're not there, you're getting fined. If you're not there enough, you're going to jail. Mm. So they take it pretty seriously.
Yeah, that's a theme running through the Protestant church well into the 1700s and 1800s.
Yeah. So now, of course, I mean, news of these developments make it back to the Pope. Dear old Pope Pius V, who's sitting there in Rome in his big hat, and he's not too happy about this development,
no.
really. And he excommunicates Elizabeth from the Catholic Church, yes. calling her Elizabeth the pretend Queen of England and the servant of crime.
Which should be a subcategory of our show. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Servants of crime.
Poisonous cabinet, the servants of crime.
Servants of crime. It's a great, yeah, absolutely. Love it.
I mean, we like Elizabeth. I mean, she does some weird stuff, but also, yay.
Now, I mean, after all Elizabeth's sort of declarations and things, I mean, people in the lower classes are just like, fine, I'm Protestant. Really?
That's a very good way of putting it. What are we today? Oh, we're Protestant.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Are we still poor and starving? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, exactly. We would be. They can't afford to pay the fines if they don't go to church, so they go to church. They've got a hard enough life as it is, just generally surviving. They don't need the aggro. We're Protestants. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, but at least at Catholic Church, you've got wine and biscuits.
Yeah, wine and biscuits at Protestant church.
Do you?
Yeah.
When?
During the communion.
I've not been. I don't know.
You still have communion. But you still have communion? Yeah. Oh, sure, this converts into the flesh. And all, it's just like, this is a biscuit.
Well, why would you do it then?
It's representative.
It's representative.
It is symbolological. Symbolic was symbolic the word, going for. Symbological.
The priest is out there going, it's symbological, people.
Yeah. It's a symbolic thing rather than a direct, this turns
into the body and blood of Christ.
It's transubstantiation.
Transubstantiation.
Yeah, none of that. None of that. But. For many in the upper classes, in the fancy classes, they're not so keen on this. They have a bit more luxury. And they think, no, we want to pray to who we want to pray to. Mm. How dare you choose our religion for us? Also, many of them have spent a small fortune supporting the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Sort of building churches, building chapels, ensuring that the priests pray for them, that monks are chanting for them, and all this sort of thing to ensure that they go to heaven.
Yeah.
It was all that for nothing.
Yeah.
And I wasted all this money. I mean, there are a number who believe that the Catholic faith is the one true faith. They fervently believe that, and that is the only way that souls go to heaven. And those people do continue practicing their faith. They are fined repeatedly for not going to Protestant services, but they've got enough money, they can just get, they'll pay the fines and be done with it. But then those people, they also start hiding Catholic priests in their homes.
Yes.
Where you get priest holes and all this sort of thing.
I mean, priest hole.
This is
That's not how it sounds if you've never heard that expression before. We really do need to explain that very briefly.
Yes, okay.
That is a hidey hole.
That is a fair point.
No, a hidey hole doesn't make sound any better. Why am I saying that? It's a little
behind a bookcase, down some secret stairs.
A little hiding place
that priests would go. Because if the authorities got an inkling that you're hiding a Catholic priest, they would come and raid the place.
Yeah,
they would tear the place to pieces.
Yeah.
So some of these are really cleverly hidden, sort of behind water closets and up chimneys and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And the tiniest spaces that these priests sort of folded themselves into to escape. Because if you were caught, the priest was killed, but then pretty much the whole family was executed as well.
Absolutely.
For sort of treason of going against the Queen.
That's why it's so special when you find a place, I'm sorry, but with a priest hole. It's like, it's not how it sounds. A priest nook. No, that's worse. A nook's cranny. No, what?
Many families, sort of in fear of their lives, they leave England. They flee and they go and settle in Flanders.
Oh, right.
It's safe over there. Yes. And we'll just watch and see what happens. Elizabeth dies in March 1603. James VI of Scotland, also Protestant, becomes James I of England. Mm-hmm. We've done a lot about him before in his anti-witchy ways. But no one really knows how he's going to approach this increasing sort of divide in religion. No one really knows what his approach is going to be. So everyone is like watching, going, is he going to follow after Elizabeth and be really strict? Or is he going to be a bit more relaxed? Or, you know, what's going on? Shortly after James takes the throne, a chap named Thomas Percy manages to wangle himself an audience with the new king. Now, Percy is a Catholic, and he really wants to know what the king's thoughts on the whole situation is. What's going on? He starts by begging for mercy on behalf of the Catholics of England.
That's okay. That sort of thing.
We want clemency, we want mercy. James is suitably subtle and vague in his response. He doesn't promise anything, but he does tell Percy that he has nothing against Catholics. I personally have no issue with you doing what the hell you want. Percy probably takes a lot more away from that comment than he maybe should have done.
Well, James I famously did sort of flip-flop kind of was just... I'd say not flip-flop. He was being a politician as well as the king.
I think also he did actually generally not really care.
No, we didn't give a shit at
about
the beginning.
If people are Catholic or Protestant, and I don't really care. It doesn't bother me.
Made a lot of promises to a lot of people, going like, oh, Scotland, I'll definitely come back and see you all the time. Didn't.
So, I mean, Thomas Percy leaves this meeting going, yay, the king loves us. He tells everyone he meets that the king is on the cusp of sort of repealing all of Elizabeth's anti-Catholic laws.
Okay, that's a bit much.
Yeah, he's really sort of taken the positives out of this meeting.
I just felt it in his presence.
No one has to worry about being persecuted for their religion anymore. I mean, some people take this even further and they become rather optimistic and believe James is going to convert to Catholicism. James is going to convert and then the entire of England will become Catholic and hurrah and all will be well. And it's like, maybe not. But for about a year or so, Catholics in England are able to live a relatively normal life. Mm. The fines stop.
Yeah.
They stop collecting the fines. They stop ransacking people's houses, searching for holes.
It's never not going to be funny.
So all this is called off. The laws are still in place, but they're just not enforced. Hope is there that things are going to get better and things are going to be great.
We have our one true
God. The king's on our side and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. Now, James is sitting there really waiting to see what Parliament, how they're going to react. Now, Parliament are all entirely Protestant.
Oh, yeah.
He's going, well, I'll see what they say before I take this any further. It does not go well. In the summer of 1604, Parliament finally notice that the Catholics aren't being persecuted. What's going on here? This won't do at all.
How many Catholics were burned this year?
This is not acceptable.
You know what?
Not acceptable.
They're just walking around willy-nilly.
Yeah, and many believe that this is a threat to England. It's got sort of the same sort of thing as a
literally
like McCarthyist sort of communism.
Well, yes.
If they aren't stamped out, then they're going to rise up and take over and we're done for.
I mean, I don't want to jump ahead too much.
So, if we don't deal with this now, there's a threat to everyone. And Parliament's...
Is there?
Parliament starts pushing the king to start reinforcing Elizabeth's laws. You need to get a hold of this.
Yeah.
You need to start getting your anti-Catholic hat on.
It's not an ostentatious hat.
It's a very, very simple hat. It's a very simple white linen horsehair hat.
Exactly.
Very scratchy.
On the Catholic side, adorned with jewels and feathers,
exactly.
But you'd have to feel guilty about it. That's it. But it looks fabulous.
But it looks fabulous, indeed. So again, Catholics' homes are being ransacked, looking for hidden priests. The fines start mounting up. Now, the Catholics that in England, they had been used to living under this oppression for many, many, many years now.
Yeah.
But what is now really pissing them off is that this time there was that sense of sort of false hope. That they had been led to believe that all was going to be well. James was on our side. It was all going to be great. But now he's betrayed us. The king has betrayed us. And it is enough for many people to want to kill him.
Yeah.
And a plot is hatched. So now today, Guy Fawkes is the most recognisable name associated with the Gunpowder Plot. I've written Plat. The Gunpowder Plot.
Just going to say.
Don't know why
the Gunpowder. That was the early planning name.
Before it came a plot.
Guy Fawkes sat down with all the others. He's like, right, I have a great gunpowder plat.
Yes.
Right, we have to pick you up on one thing. No, it's better than a plot.
Definitely
honestly.
A plat. Someone else said, hey, you had a plat earlier. You
Why are you going through all the vowels? Just stick with O, it works.
Yes, it works. Yes. It works.
And then later there was the gunpowder plut. Anyway,
the plot is all started by a chap called Robert Catesby. Now Catesby has
I'm not celebrating him. I just
hurrah for Catesby.
He's just a really interesting character that no one talks about.
Yeah. Catesby has become increasingly convinced that something has to be done. James needs to be removed from the throne. He needs to go. At the end of 1603, Catesby organises a trip to Spain. Now, this is led by a chap called Thomas Winter. He has been chosen as an emissary to the King of Spain. Also amongst this group who are making this trip are a chap called John Wright, who had been part of an earlier failed rebellion against Elizabeth, and a certain chap named Guy Fawkes. Now, Guy Fawkes has spent much of the past few years fighting in the Netherlands.
Now, are we going to reference the fact that it's supposed to be pronounced Guy?
Only because he took a Spanish name.
Okay, nice. Carry on.
Which I haven't actually gone in, because I've not actually gone into much into the history of Guy Fawkes himself. This is more about the plot
in general. Absolutely, because we shouldn't. But someone will go, I think it's actually pronounced Guy.
Well, as far as I can see, his name is Guy Fawkes. He's a Yorkshire man. When he moves to the Netherlands, he starts fighting not for the Spanish, but on behalf of the Spanish in some conflicts there. And he takes the name Guido.
Guido.
So I think that's where that comes from. Nice. I could be entirely wrong on that part, but that's what I understand from what I've read.
It's referenced to anyone who was about to type there. All right, but we're going to carry on calling him Guy Fawkes.
I'm going to call him Guy Fawkes. That's what I've known all my life.
All of that.
He had multiple names depending on where he was in the world.
He was one of those guys. He was such a gap year student. Yeah. He was walking around going, yeah, my name's Guido. No.
But he fought on behalf of Spanish for many, many years. And he actually had an excellent reputation. He was a skilled soldier, a military man. He really knew what he was doing and had been part of many, many successful battles. So this group, they went to Spain. Now, Spain at the time is considered the defender of the Catholic faith. They are there to defend the church. If anyone is going to help wrestle England out of the tyranny of Protestantism, it's going to be Spain. Surely, yeah. Surely they are going to help. Thomas Winter, he actually has an audience with the king.
Ooh.
The king goes, no.
Sorry. Oh, really?
Sorry, no. We're not gonna help. We're not gonna help.
Ooh.
No, nope. not today.
Love to, but no.
Yeah, I mean, the Spanish had previously launched a very costly endeavour to try and convert England to the true church when Elizabeth had been on the throne, the grand old Spanish Armada.
They did.
It did not end well. That was a very, very, very expensive disaster for Spain, and they're not really keen to repeat that. In fact, they're actually looking to pursue peace with James to try and end these sort of conflicts in Europe. So the group returns home rather sort of despondent. They were hoping, we're gonna return with 10,000 Spanish troops behind on our back, and they've got no, we've got no one. it's all a bit shit. They realize that help is not coming from a foreign power. If they're gonna do this, it's up to them.
Oh god.
Robert Catesby, he is not going to give up quite so easily.
Uh-uh.
He is going to make a plan.
A plan? A plut?
A plut. A plot.
A plit.
Drink?
I think it's time for a drink.
I think it is.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, Nick.
Hello.
We have our drinks.
Yes.
We have...
a different variation.
Of the gunpowder treason and plot.
Yes.
So, we've changed it around. We're going to dive in here.
That's better.
Yep, that's definitely better.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we had much less of the honey syrup, only a small amount, less of the apple juice,
yep.
More of the Laphroaig,
yep.
Knocked down the Grand Marnier a little
knocked
bit.
Knocked down the Grand Marnier.
Yeah,
and
we did.
And exchanged Angostura bitters for whiskey bitters.
Whiskey bitters. And it's lovely.
It's funny good.
That's really nice. Perfect for a winter's bonfire-y night. That's masterful.
Marvellous.
Well done, Nick.
Gunpowder, treason and plot.
Gunpowder, treason and plot.
Okay, so back to our plats.
Back to the plats.
Yep. So Catesby, he's not giving up. No. He knew he may have failed getting help from Spain. He's going to go his own way. In February 1604, he invites the men who went with him to Spain to discuss a new plan. Also present at this meeting is Thomas Percy. Now, Thomas Percy is the chap who went to James to begin with to plead with the king for mercy. Catesby's plat... for the rest of time, it's going to be a plat. Catesby's plot is laid before them. They are going to blow up the House of Lords during the state opening of Parliament.
It's bold.
It's ballsy.
You lay that on the table. We're like, we just thought we'd have a slight protest in the street, but I like your style.
Yeah, we've made some banners. in one swoop, they are going to take out the entire Protestant leadership of the country.
Yeah.
Because the lords are going to be there, the king's going to be there, the heirs to the throne are all going to be there. So yeah, they're going to take out the lot, leaving it entirely open for a Catholic restoration. Yeah. So the plan was to put James's daughter on the throne. She was like 6 years old at the time and entirely manipulatable, they thought. They could get to do whatever she wanted, whatever they wanted. So she could go, yeah, it's fine, Catholics. Can I have my doll now?
She's just a girl.
She's just a girl. She doesn't know what she's doing.
Yeah. Lovely.
Now, there is a certain reluctance among some of the group. It is a drastic step. It is a bold plot to lay, and many are sort of fearful of the... But if this doesn't work, if we get found out, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
The repercussions would be severe, one would think.
Yes, but regardless, the repercussions would be severe.
Yeah,
but in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, Catesby is a convincing speaker. He is a good orator.
He was, yeah.
So he convinces, if we want to do this, this is the only way.
Mm.
If this is the goal we want to achieve, a Catholic England, then these are the steps we've got to take. And they go... okay, let's do it. And they all swear an oath of loyalty to each other, and an oath of secrecy that they're not going to tell anyone.
Anyone, yes.
The conspirators believe that they have until February 1605 to finalise all their plans. So they've got the best part of a year to do this, because that is when the next grand state opening
Yep,
of Parliament
Valentine's Day also,
is,
you can't
is
interfere
scheduled
with that.
For. In June 1604, Thomas Percy is given a position in the Band of Gentlemen Pensioners.
Lovely.
Now, this is a mounted troop of bodyguards.
Mounted?
For the king.
Mounted on the priest's hole.
So it's somewhat ironic that he is given a position as a king's bodyguard when he is part of a group to blow up the king.
It is, but not at all. Yeah. Not at all at this time period. Everyone was trying to kill everyone.
But it gives him the perfect excuse to take a property in London.
Oh, yeah.
So I need to be near the House of Lords. I've got these duties to fulfil. So it's entirely understandable that he should now be renting a home right in pretty much next door to the House of Lords.
Bloody hell. Boomers could rent what they wanted, couldn't they?
Absolutely. Guy Fawkes takes charge of this property. Now, he now uses the name of John Johnson. and styles themselves as Thomas Percy's servant.
That was a very fast made up name.
Yeah, exactly.
My name is, what's your name? John.
John. What,
Johnson. Surname? Johnson.
Yeah.
Of which family? The Johnsons.
The Johns. So John Johnson, aka Guy Fawkes, is now living in this house pretty much next door to the houses of the House of Lords.
You can say Houses of Parliament.
House
of
Parliament.
Well, you know? It's both. Yeah.
It's both.
For
the Palace
context,
of Westminster.
We can't say the House of Commons because it wasn't.
No such thing existed.
He's living next to it, loving the rent.
Yes, having a grand old time.
Having a grand old time. Now, going to all of the bistros.
All the fancy parties. Slowly, the group start stockpiling gunpowder. If they're going to blow shit up, they need a lot of gunpowder. Now, the sale of gunpowder is somewhat controlled by the government. They don't want everyone getting hold of the stuff.
Indeed.
But you're able to buy it in small amounts for personal use and things. So merchants are able to buy it for cannons on ships to defend themselves against pirates and what like. So there is reasonable use for buying gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what really helped, Guy Fawkes being a military man, he had many, many contacts.
Absolutely.
They didn't really ask that many questions. As long as the cash there, they didn't really care. So he was a great contact.
He just kept rocking up to his contacts going, a little powder for the day. Here you go. Right, I don't want any more cocaine.
No more coke.
I just want gunpowder.
But then they start pondering about, okay, how do we get our increasing stockpiles of gunpowder to where it needs to be? At the moment, it's all being stored in Lambeth, where Robert Catesby has his house. But there's no point blowing up Lambeth. It's on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
So we need to get it across and somehow into the Palace of Westminster. How do we do all this? Now, in the 17th century, the Palace of Westminster is a complete jumble. It's not what you see today, which is very much a Victorian sort of grandeur. It's the original sort of Palace of Westminster is a complete jumble of buildings.
It is going
back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Sort of chapels built on little palaces and merchants. It's a complete maze. It's a warren clustered around, sort of medieval structures and things. It is pretty much accessible by anyone. Anyone can be wandering through there. As long as you look vaguely respectable, no one's going to stop you. So merchants and tradesmen and lords and nobles and things, they're all just milling about.
You would be expected to go into this area.
Exactly. There are a few guards wandering around the place, but you have to be really dodgy for them to stop you. What's even better is that many of the buildings have cellars and undercrofts and such like that you can easily rent out.
Oh.
Anyone can rent out a cellar in the Palace of Westminster. It's just the king needs some extra money. We'll rent out some space. Bit of storage.
I like the idea of the king renting out some extra space. Going, by the way, I'm actually the king.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but you still have to rent the space.
Yeah. And so Thomas Percy is quite easily able to rent out a storage space directly in the basement below the palace, claiming it's for the Earl of Northumberland's firewood. And I mean, who can argue with the Earl of Northumberland's firewood?
Big landowner.
So he needs someone to store his firewood for the winter.
Everyone's going, where is Northumberland? What?
Is there no closer storage place?
There's not. Does he have a place in London? Doesn't matter. It's the Earl. He needs his firewood here. We have no questions about this whatsoever.
And no one does. They go, okay, fine. The Earl of Northumberland, he needs some storage space. Right this way. Right this way, sir. So things are on. Ooh, okay, we're going to start this. It's all very exciting.
Ooh, there we are.
We've got our storage space.
That was the third meeting. They all got together and went, guys, we're doing finger gestures here, by the way, people.
They start moving the gunpowder from Lambeth across the river under the shadow of night. They row across the river and start stashing it in this storage space. It was disguised by piles of wood and such like. It's not that obvious. But they start stockpiling the gunpowder under the palace. Then in December 1604, it is announced that the opening of Parliament has been delayed. So it was scheduled for February 1605. Plague has struck London.
Plague!
The plague has been cropping up. And people go, no. We don't fancy that. I don't really want to be in London when there's the plague around. So they decided to delay the state opening of Parliament. Get the plague out of the way.
Yeah,
let it kill the poor people.
The pesky plague.
Once it's run its course, then the fancy people will come back and we can do all these grand openings. So it's pushed sort of sometime in the autumn. We'll open Parliament.
Oh yeah,
We'll work it out.
Let the plague work itself out by killing masses of people.
Absolutely, it's fine as long as it doesn't kill the rich people who are now in their countryside enjoying their country homes. So now this delay just gives the conspirators more time to stockpile more gunpowder, to move all their supplies and things into place,
brilliant,
but also to increase the number of men who are part of this conspiracy. So the number of people who are involved starts increasing. Now, these are all people who are incredibly determined to make this plot work.
Yeah.
They're absolutely devoted Catholics. They want this plan to succeed. They include chaps like Lord Mordaunt, who, like Fawkes, was a soldier, good connections for supplies of even more gunpowder, which was grand. Then you had Robert Winter, John Rant, Christopher Wright, all devout Catholics whose families had suffered horribly in the past with anti-Catholic sentiment. They were all there willing to do whatever it took to bring Catholicism back. One maybe slightly less willing participant is a chap called Thomas Bates. Now, Thomas Bates is Robert Catesby's servant, who one evening just overhears some plotting in the next room. I don't know if he's there at the door and then someone opens the door and goes, "Ah, you." And,
well, I heard a lot of stuff about you going to Mordor and stuff, like, but I don't really mean anything.
Yeah, and he has sort of sworn to keep the secret or forfeit his life, basically. So you will join our conspiracy and be entirely a participant, or we're going to kill you. So he doesn't really have a great little choice in joining the conspiracy. By October 1605, the plan has been finalised. The state opening of Parliament has been confirmed. It is scheduled for November the 5th. It's going to go ahead. Plague has run itself out. The gunpowder is all in place. It's all stored down there. Guy Fawkes, he is going to be the one who lights the fuse and then scarpers across the Thames and makes his escape. He is the man designated with the job. However, just days before, on October the 26th, the brother-in-law of one of the conspirators, a chap called Lord Monteagle, receives an anonymous letter. The letter reads, "My lord, out of the love I bear to some of your friends, I have a care of your preservation. Therefore, I would advise you, as you tender your life, to devise some excuse to shift your attendance at this Parliament. For God and man hath concurred to punish the wickedness of this time. And think not slightly of this advertisement, but retire yourself into your country, where you may expect the event in safety. For though there be no appearance of any stir yet, I say there shall be a terrible blow this Parliament."
The person reading that goes, "What?"
Guess what?
They're going to kill you.
They're going to kill you. So, my lord, I really like you. You're my best mate. I don't want you to get blown up. Therefore, please go away.
Go away. Don't go to Parliament.
Don't go to Parliament. Because some evil, evil men are going to punish the wickedness. Don't ignore this letter.
In old-timey speak, that's what it said.
That's what it said.
It
absolutely
also was a little bit convoluted as well.
A lot convoluted, as all writing was at the time.
As it was, because we don't know who's reading this. I don't want to tell you exactly what's happening, but this is exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Monteagle, he hands the letter over to Robert Cecil, James I's chief minister and sort of spy master.
We have met him before.
Yeah. Now, Cecil has heard some rumblings.
Rumblings.
What's going on, but he has no idea the details or anything like that. So he decides to wait and see what happens, what plays out, really.
Okay.
Now, the king at this point, he's away hunting in Cambridge.
Lovely.
A grand old time. He returns to London on the 1st of November, and as soon as he returns, he is shown this letter. Now, the king is somewhat more alarmed than Robert Cecil seems to be, and immediately is convinced that they're trying to kill us all. And he instructs that they need to search the palace. We need to find out what these conspirators are going on about. So they do. A huge search is organised. Guards hunt top to bottom. They report back, I didn't fire very much. Lots of stuff down there. There's loads of shit going on down there.
We don't think any of it is a problem.
No, no problem. We did really? Find there was a chap called John Johnson. He was down there. He was down there. He's a servant for Thomas Percy, though.
Yeah.
We know Thomas. We know Thomas Percy. Servant for him. All fine. He's just stacking up firewood and some barrels. It's good. The name Thomas Percy starts ringing alarm bells. So, well, we know the name Thomas Percy. He is known as a bit of a Catholic agitator. So, obviously, the king has met him before. So, he's known as a... this is not good. The king thinks, can we search a bit more? Can we be a bit more thorough in our searching? So, another search is carried out the next evening. That evening, Chief Guard Thomas Knivett leads his men back into the Undercroft. Strangely, the servant is there again. Same chap, John Johnson. What are you doing here? What are you doing here, John? This time he's dressed in a dark cloak. He has riding boots and spurs
on. Oh, for God's sake.
As if he's looking to get somewhere quick. They are rather more thorough this time in their searching. And John Johnson, he is found to have a pocket watch with him, several matches, and a pack of fuses. They search more thoroughly through the firewood. And they find 36 barrels of gunpowder. That wasn't here yesterday, surely. I think it was.
Really was. You didn't really check.
Really, really was.
No, don't look behind the curtain.
Guy Fawkes is arrested immediately.
Oh, Guy Fawkes is arrested.
He is brought before the king. The king is amazed that anyone would have the audacity to try and kill him. I mean, he also asked Guy Fawkes, you just to get to me, you're willing to kill all these innocent people in there, because you're not just killing me, there are hundreds of people in this place that would have been killed. Do you have no regrets over any of this, over any of that? Guy Fawkes replies, the only regret he has that he was caught, that the plan failed.
Ooh.
He refuses to give up any of his conspirators. At this point, he's still saying his name's John Johnson. He hasn't even given his real name at this point. The king orders that Fawkes be tortured. We need confession. We need interrogation.
We need names.
Exactly.
Oh.
He is taken. He is suspended by manacles. He's put on the rack.
Yeah.
His arms and legs are stretched until they pop out of sockets. And all sorts of horrendous things are done.
He's tickled with cushions.
Eventually, he does indeed confess. And he gives the names of others involved. And you can actually see his written confession.
Yes.
Still. And you can see how he signs his name.
Oh, it's not nice.
This is a man who is in a lot of pain and has not had proper now control of his limbs because he can't even write his own name properly.
Oh, man.
While all this is going on, the rest of the conspirators are there on the run. Already, they know the Fawkes has been captured, has been found out.
It's only a matter of time,
so they need to leg it.
Right?
Greg? Robert Catesby begins to announce to all the villagers that he passes through that King James is dead. King James is dead, he announces as he goes. King James is not dead. He calls for Catholics to rise up. Rise up and reclaim their rightful place. The king is dead. Join me. Join me. We'll take London. They ride from town to town to town. But instead of this huge army that they expect thousands of people to rise up and join them to restore Catholicism. They've got about 40 men.
Riding around and someone going, yes, I'll do it.
Yeah, they gather about 40 men to the cause. And he's there going, well, it's not quite what I had imagined.
That's shit. Sorry.
Okay. And in a fantastic twist of irony, as they prepare to make their stand, Catesby and his men manage to blow themselves up using their own gunpowder. Now, apparently without Guy Fawkes' expertise or the slightest bit of common sense, they believe that in order to dry out this damp gunpowder, They should lay it in front of a fire.
Jesus Christ. What?
To dry out this gunpowder. So
I didn't know this. What?
Yeah. No, neither did I until I started researching. Obviously, the barrels got a bit damp on their trek
and
things.
Oh, they just put it next to some fire.
So we take the gunpowder, we put it in front of the fire.
Jesus.
Dry it out, and then we can use it in our guns and our pistols and all such like. Unsurprisingly.
Oh, my God.
It explodes horribly. Causes serious burns to a number of the men, blinds one person completely.
No, it's not funny, but
it's
oh
not.
God.
It's not funny, but it's also really stupid.
It's also like they've got the 40 men who have staggered forward, like, we'll do it like, okay, it's the best we can do. Let's dry out our gunpowder and then blow their faces off.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this tiny army is now burned and tired and on fire. one,
it's quite scary, yeah, to be fair.
One of the men asks Robert Catesby what they're going to do next. He replies, "We mean here to die."
Wow.
So this is his last stand. Probably not a great comfort to the men surrounding him.
Some of them backing off into yeah. the woods like, no.
On November the 8th, the Sheriff of Warwickshire shows up with 200 men.
Mm.
Now, the conspirators do their best to go out fighting, but they are severely outnumbered. They are not getting away from this. Robert Catesby himself is shot. He crawls to a nearby chapel and is later found dead on the floor, clutching a statue of the Virgin Mary.
No, he didn't. Sorry, he didn't. I know, it's a lovely
so
image.
So the legend goes.
It's a lovely image, but no.
The rest of the men who survived this brief battle are rounded up.
Yes.
Seven of them are identified as conspirators in the gunpowder plot. Mm. And they are tried alongside Guy Fawkes and found guilty of treason and sentenced to be hung, drawn and quartered.
Eww.
On the 30th of January, 1606, Everard Digby, Robert Winter, John Grant and Thomas Bates, the unwilling servant, are executed in St. Paul's Churchyard.
Yeah.
They are hung until they're almost dead. They are then released, and as they gasp for breath, the executioner digs a knife into their stomach, pulls out their entrails. Finally, their legs and arms are all chopped off. In theory, while they're still alive, though if anyone survived any of that previous ordeal, God help them. The four quarters of their bodies are then sent to the four quarters of England as warning to those who would risk plotting treason. The remaining men are due to suffer the same fate the next day at Westminster. These four men, Thomas Winter, Ambrose Rookwood, Robert Keyes and Guy Fawkes, stand on the gallows with ropes around their necks. The crowds are shouting and booing when all of a sudden Guy Fawkes leaps from the platform
wow.
he is standing on. He plummets down, neck snaps instantly.
Yeah.
As he goes on the rope. He has escaped the horror of being disemboweled alive.
Good for him.
Good for him. They still take down his dead body and quarter it for good measure and send it around. Along with the other three chaps who hadn't been quick enough to follow suit.
I mean, I say good for him for Guy Fawkes. Like, that's a smart move. There. Just really, kill yourself.
Really smart move. Absolutely. So make it quick. Because you know
quick.
This is not going to be fun.
The
following year, Parliament passes the Thanksgiving Act.
The Thanksgiving Act
of 1606, which mandates that by law, all English citizens must pray and give thanks to God that the terrorists did not kill the king.
Mm-hmm.
That day became known as Guy Fawkes Night, Bonfire Night, and is celebrated on the 5th of November to this very day. The brief abridged version of the gunpowder plot.
Gunpowder treason and plot. Wonderful story, Nick. Oh, it's so good. So the Thanksgiving Act was all about the Catholic attempt on Protestant lives. Guy Fawkes really didn't come into it until, what was it, the 1800s?
Oh, much later.
Yeah, it was not Guy Fawkes Night.
No.
Guy Fawkes was not in it at all. All
that
it was,
is a much, much later in the last 100 years or so sort of addition.
It was a mandate until about the 1800s, and then it was kind of, oh, okay, we quite enjoy Bonfire Night, and these traditions had sort of sprouted up. at first it was all about go to a church ceremony. Mm. You must go to church and you must listen to why God prevented this from happening. And then it was bonfires, it was fireworks, and then Guy Fawkes emerged. Mm. Just because of the guy who was supposed to light the fuse.
Yeah, he was the one who was caught. He was the one who was found.
He was the one who was caught first.
So yeah, his likeness appears in lots of in papers and things like that, and he has got that. I mean, the only likeness of him is from after he was caught,
yes.
And is from the, so no one actually knows what he looks like.
No,
he's very much portrayed as the villain with the big pointy beard, the pointy moustache and things.
The Guy Fawkes, the anonymous,
the anonymous, the absolutely. So the he has become synonymous with anonymous.
oh, very nice, very well done. You could say that. You couldn't say plot, mate. All the way through this.
And the whole V for Vendetta thing as well.
The way this has evolved over the years is fascinating. It's entirely enthralling that it was all about Catholicism versus Protestants, and then it became bonfire celebration. It did, but for many, many years, it still is in certain countries, a celebration of Protestants over Catholics. In England, in the 50s and 60s, it was... have bonfire night, kids going out, penny for the guy. So you would get this scarecrow, essentially, who was dressed up like Guy Fawkes and whatever you could do, and you were getting a penny and you were going to go and buy fireworks with this. Mm. And that's great about the 60s. It's just go buy massive amounts of fireworks and set them off everywhere. It was all in people's gardens, in the streets. You would get the Catherine wheels, you would get the sparklers, you'd be running around and having all of that food and drink tradition. But there was no organized event until everyone went, oh shit, we can't do this anymore. Yeah. And then a law was passed like, you can't buy fireworks unless you're 18, because a lot of burnings are happening.
Yourself up.
Yes. But then very recently, the mask, the figure of Guy Fawkes, has now been used by Anonymous. I don't know what the word would be for it. Really, the Guy Fawkes has turned into the symbol of anarchy.
Yeah, and he really wasn't that. He was just very different. He was just, I don't like the current system. I want to replace it with my own deeply structured system.
100%. He was going to put in a whole other regime. And everyone else, and Robert Catesby as well. So, they were all going to put in another regime. They weren't trying to screw the system to like absolute freedom.
It's become that sort of symbol of, yes... yeah, blowing up the establishment and stuff like that, and not really thinking about, okay, what's it replaced with?
But as you said, it's credited to the amazing graphic novel by Alan Moore,
absolutely,
which is V for Vendetta. V for Vendetta is brilliant. It is a piece of fiction. It's fantastic.
I love the film as well.
I really like the film. The film gets a lot of bad press. It's not the same as the graphic novel. It's great, and the principle behind it is the same. Well, anarchy is anarchy. That's it. Wonderful, wonderful.
But there we go.
Tale through the history of Guy Fawkes. Thank you for sharing that with us. And anyone who didn't know, there are certain people probably around the world who go, I don't know what any of this was. Because Bonfire Night is such an English thing.
I can't imagine it's much in the States, really. I can't imagine you do Bonfire Night in the States.
Well, in Ireland as well, like you do bonfires and fires around Halloween.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't...
In Ireland, you probably wouldn't do, yay, let's burn the Catholics!
Well, what we did, actually, like living in England as well, but as Irish people, we did bonfires on Halloween. So you sort of do that for the lighting of Samhain and everything. But every year we were sat down and told, like, okay, so Bonfire Night is about this, but also here's the history of why the Catholics are better. Okay, this isn't accurate. None of this is accurate. Yeah. Like, ah, well, they all yell about Guy Fawkes. Here, have this toffee apple. It's lovely.
It's grand. If there's a celebration with snacks, I'm there.
Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the story of the gunpowder plot? Did you know about the plot? Do you know about the history of it? Was it just a bit of bonfire fun for you? Until now, tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode on social media or wherever you listen to your podcast. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your more stories that you'd like to share. Your stories of bonfire nights.
Yes.
That would be nice. But most importantly, while you do so, you must mix up a gunpowder treason and plot.
Gunpowder treason and plot.
But Nick's way.
Yes. We have written down our version 2 recipe. Mm. So that will be out on Friday. Mm-hmm. So definitely give it a go.
You can look up the autumn bonfire as
absolutely
well. The important thing is to drink.
The important thing is to drink around a big old fire.
Indeed. And tell us the snacks that you enjoy around a big old fire. And if you're having a bonfire night this winter. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisonous cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you. Boy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.